The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you until 12 noon today. It's Monday, the 12th of August. And how did you sleep last night? I was sleeping absolutely fine until I'd say about half four, 25 to five, when I was pretty much jumped out of the bed with a bang outside. And for the next 10, 15 minutes, there were some huge thunder cracks in between about half four and five this morning. One in particular, it was massive. I'd say very few people managed to sleep through it. Hope all is okay where you are and your power is okay, your water is okay, and you haven't had any adverse impacts from those storms last night. It was a heavy one, but it's over now, and hopefully there's a few, as you've heard from Dunham Reader, there's a few places around the county where power outages are still being experienced, and there are some still water problems as well. Hopefully all that would be resolved reasonably quickly, and we will have a good day. This is the 9 till noon show. You can make contact with us with your priorities, your take on the day's news. You can text us on 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can call us on 074 91 25000. If you're outside the dialing area, it's 00353-7491-25000. And it's Caroline producing and taking your calls, Shannon taking calls outside as well. And where would I be without those two wonderful ladies? Also, you can contact us via social media at Highland Radio on X, Highland Hub on Facebook. We're on all other wonderful types of social media as well, like Snapchat and Instagram. Not quite sure what we do on Snapchat, but we do something on it, apparently.
News.
Oh. I do beg your pardon. Right, that was my fault. Always remember, bring back down the S2 button, Donald. And if you don't, that's the sort of thing that happens. Now, as I said, you can make contact with us. You can also use email. It's comments at highlandradio.com. We have lots to talk about on the show today, but as ever, your take and your priorities are what drive this show and make it special. Let's take a look at the newspapers this morning. It's Monday, the 12th of August. Donegal News this morning. A shambles, families' anger at LUH over wristband error. Dion Meehan writes that the family of a 96-year-old woman have dubbed Letterkenny University Hospital a shambles after their mother was given the wrong wristband on arrival at the emergency department there. In a shown woman, Christina Beattie, who is 96, attended the hospital's emergency department after falling in at home, but the family have spoken at their shock after their elderly mother was given another patient's wristband. Also, HSC gives Ardra GP update. The HSC says it is actively recruiting for a new GP in Ardra. The current doctor, Dr. Sweeney, is due to finish up on August 22nd. That's less than a fortnight's time. I know a lot of people in Ardra concerned and wondering where they're going to go for their GP appointments in the days, weeks and months after that. So we'll be watching that one again with interest, and that situation there, it's getting really close to the deadline. Difficult to see really how a new GP could be in situ and ready to take over the day after Dr. Sweeney leaves, but we'll be watching that, as we say. Derry News this morning, obviously the front page is taken up with those violent scenes at Naylor's Row on Saturday night. Looking inside, an interesting story, major student accommodation boost for Derry City Centre. A key heritage-led regeneration project to provide student accommodation within the walled city was formally opened at Magazine Street. The project, led by the Inner City Trust and supported by UU and the Architectural Heritage Fund, has involved the restoration and refurbishment of three adjoining heritage buildings. It looks really good, actually, the facilities at 17 to 20 Magazine Street. And it's great to see that part of the city being regenerated, because it's a wonderful part of Derry, and I love walking up around that whole area, the whole area around sort of Plum Street up toward the cathedral. There's some lovely side streets there, some lovely little walks, you know, going off Bishop Street in both directions too. It's a great part of the city, in my humble opinion. Interesting too, the Truth Recovery, the Executive Office have an ad. It just happens to be on the same page as that story. The Executive Office has launched a public consultation on proposals to set up a statutory public inquiry for those affected by mother and baby institutions, Magdalen laundries, workhouses and their pathways and practices, along with a financial redress scheme. There's two consultations taking place in the City Hotel in Derry. They're both taking place on the 20th of August, and if my maths in my head is correct, that's tomorrow week. That'll be Tuesday, August 20th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. And more details available at executive office hse-ni.gov.uk consultations. And the closing date for all responses is the 19th of next month. But two consultation events at the City Hotel in Derry taking place tomorrow week on that Truth Recovery public consultation. Let's look at the Nationals. Obviously, a lot of photographs of the Olympic closing ceremony last night, and what an interesting ceremony it was. Tom Cruise still doing his own stunts, it would appear. And as soon as I saw the bike, funny, I was watching it with my daughter. As soon as I saw him get on the bike with a leather jacket, I thought, ah, that's the opening scene to Top Gun. Although he was taking the bike a lot slower through the stadium than he was doing it actually in the film, and then riding onto the plane. And it was the sort of thing you would expect Hollywood to do. And I must say, it was a lovely touch putting the three Olympic rings over the two O's on the Hollywood sign. Really, really good. But looking inside the Independent, the story that caught my eye this morning, it's an interesting one. Horses are smarter than given credit for, new study suggests. Horses are much smarter than previously thought, scientists say, after a study showed they performed better than expected in a complex reward-based game. Researchers found that when denied treats for not following the rules of the game, the horses were instantly able to switch strategies to get more rewards. It shows the animals have the ability to think and plan ahead, something previously considered beyond their capacity. And that's according to scientists from Nottingham Trent University. Interesting one. So keep an eye on the horses. If there's a horse in the field outside, you wouldn't know what to be planning now. And maybe George Orwell got it wrong, because if you read Orwell, the pigs were the clever ones, and there was two horses. There was Boxer, and there was the female horse whose name I've forgotten, and she was sort of quite vain, and Boxer was the loyal, steady workhorse, and maybe Boxer was a lot more credit than Orwell gave him credit for. Now let's look at the Irish Daily Mail this morning. Fine Gael have had some success in recent times in getting high-profile people from Maria Walsh, who was well-known outside of political circles, and more recently Nina Carberry, and they've got them both into the European Parliament. And now Fianna Fáil may be looking in the same direction. We had the retirement announcement of Deputy Eamon O'Queeve recently, and it now seems that TV celebrity Gráinne Shoiga is eyeing up that seat being vacated by Eamon O'Queeve. And Gráinne Shoiga has been canvassing Fianna Fáil delegates in a bid to get on the ticket for the forthcoming general election. It would be a stunning coup, the paper says, for Fianna Fáil to have Ms Shoiga on an election ticket. And according to party leader members who met her last week, she is odds on to do just that. She was very well received by the delegates of Galway West, said a Fianna Fáil member. Now, the Galway races were on recently, and I know Fianna Fáil would traditionally have had a presence at the Galway races, and lots of discussions and important behind-the-scenes conversation take place at the Galway races. It could well have been in that context that Gráinne Shoiga has been doing the necessary pressing of the flesh. Irish Times this morning, looking at the inside of the paper, and there's an interesting one. Limerick Hospital support team finds issue with patient flow. University Hospital Limerick has a level of acceptance about the intractable nature of overcrowding and believes that increasing bed numbers is the only solution, the HSC has been told. Now, we do know that, and if you, as I would do, we would look at the INMO's trolley watch figures every day that shows us how many people are admitted to the hospital but unable to get into beds because there aren't sufficient beds in the hospital. Now, sometimes Letterkenny can be in the top three or four. It was actually number two one day last week. It was 49 awaiting beds in Letterkenny. But even on the day that there was 49 awaiting beds in Letterkenny, and that was number two on the national list, Limerick was number one. It was 102 was the figure in Limerick. The numbers of people awaiting beds in Limerick is always way, way above any other area. I think I can think of a handful of occasions in the past, maybe year and a half, where perhaps one day Cork's been ahead of Limerick, another day Galway's been ahead of Limerick. And usually the top five are inevitably Limerick, Galway, Cork. Letterkenny is always there. Well, very often there or thereabouts. Letterkenny has this habit recently of sort of, it'll be 9 one day and 49 the next, and then back down to 6 and then possibly back up to 20. But Cork, Galway, Limerick, and to a lesser extent Letterkenny are hospitals that regularly feature on that list. And the HSE team that went in there have passed on a report to the Chief Executive, Brendan Gloucester, and they say the team doesn't believe that capacity is the only issue, but the management of patient flow is also a contributing factor. Now, discharges can be an issue, and we know that, and we've had these discussions up in this part of the world as well, that, I mean, the idea being you want your people to spend as little time as possible in the emergency department, you want people to spend as little time as possible in the ward, and the idea being as soon as they can leave the ward, you get them off the ward, you get them into the community, you get them back to their own home if possible. Now, in order to do that, you've got to have the support structures in place, you've got to have the community teams in place, you've got to have all that done, and maybe these are things that are going to get looked at in Limerick, because one of the problems they have in Limerick is there was two or three sort of community hospitals around the area. Ennis, for instance, was a full regional, a full general hospital with an ED. That was then scrapped. So now what was happening was when you've got people in a place like Ennis that no longer has an ED, they all now have to go to Limerick. And what they were doing was they're sort of, you know, rationalising things by you shut down the ED in a place like Ennis. Ennis becomes effectively a large community hospital. The acute and ED service moves up to Limerick. But if you don't have a corresponding increase in capacity in Limerick, what you're actually now doing is you're basically throwing another hospital in on top of it. And I think that may well be what happened in Limerick over the years. Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Everything is jawsome for Lego trawler. Love this story. Keith Perry writes, a fisherman has caught a rare Lego shark 27 years after it went missing in a famous shipping accident. It's one of 4.7 million pieces lost in the great Lego spill of 1997. A freak wave hit the Tokyo Express 20 miles off Cornwall, causing it to tilt dangerously, losing 62 containers. Richard West, who was fishing for Monkfish and Sole, found the toy Lego shark while trawling off the coast of Penzance. He contacted the Lego Lost at Sea project, and it's the first ever reported shark to be recovered from the spill. So, well, love, how did work go today? Oh, it was great. I caught a shark. Oh, what kind of shark was it? Was it a bottlenose? Was it a whatever? No, love, it was Lego. Yeah. Now, let's look at the Irish Daily Star. Celine, he can't go Don playing my tune. And I saw this over the weekend. Celine Dion's management have issued a statement hitting out at Donald Trump because he used a recording and video of Celine Dion singing My Heart Will Go On at a Trump-Vance campaign rally in Montana. The statement says, and I like this, the statement says, in no way is this use authorised and Celine Dion does not endorse this or any similar use. Then, dot, 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 and really? That song? Doughty O'Shea has revealed he's gone back to college to train as a life coach. As he admits, every television presenter's career has a shelf life. The Kerry native has been on our screens since 1994, working across programmes such as T.G. Cahir's Weather Forecasts, RTE's Today Show and The Rose of Tralee. He says he loves working on television, but he feels it won't last forever. He says, the day is going to come where they're going to tap me on the shoulder and say, Doughty, we're after copping on to you. You're gone. And reminds me of Dustin the Turkey on Zig and Zag many, many years ago when Zig and Zag did the den in the afternoons. And there was one legendary period where the den used to finish every afternoon by Dustin ringing a celebrity. And it could be a radio presenter, it could be a newsreader, it could be a singer, and it would be like, you just see Dustin pick up the phone and you hear that, grr, 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 and he just goes, hello, is that Donald Kavanagh? Hey, the game's up. You're bleeding brutal. And for a person who is supposedly intelligent and in their 20s, as I was at the time, I absolutely loved it. I made a point every day of getting in from work just so I could watch the end of the den, just so I could see who Dustin was going to run up and slag off over the phone. Because that's the way I rolled when I was 20. And to be honest, if the den were still on, I'd still be doing it. The Irish Sun, to close. Ireland ace Clinton Roy is a changed man. Ex-Ireland striker Clinton Morrison says his old teammate Roy Keane has mellowed out since becoming a granddad. Londoner Clinton qualified for the boys in green through his Dubliner granny. The 45-year-old bagged 9 goals. He says Keane has had a grandchild and now Roy Keane has mellowed. And Roy is now just a lovely, cuddly... Yeah, I will believe Roy Keane is a lovely, cuddly guy when I see it. Just want to mention something, by the way, as part of Highland Radio's efforts to ensure that we are providing you with the quality service that you deserve and the best programming that we can possibly provide. Some of our team are out and about in Donegal this morning with laptops, and they'll be asking people questions as part of a survey Highland Radio is conducting. So just to say that this is happening, it's happening today. So if anyone approaches you today wearing Highland Radio clothing, holding a laptop and saying, saying, you know, look, I'm here on behalf of Highland. Would you answer a few questions? I can absolutely confirm it is genuine. They are out there working for Highland. This is part of our ongoing efforts to make sure that we're giving you the best possible service that we can. And we have a really good team. They're really fantastic people that are out and about. And please do engage with them, because it'll help them do their job. It'll help us improve our service. And ultimately, it'll mean that you get a better service on air and through our various electronic and social media platforms as well. So if you're approached by somebody today conducting a survey on behalf of Highland Radio, and I know you have to be so careful these days with stuff like that, I can confirm it's genuine. They are members of our team, and this is part of an ongoing project to ultimately make sure, hopefully, that you get a better service. Now, let's go to line one, because we're joined on the line by Chad Leffler, who is the owner of Your Man's Coffee Cove in the vicinity of Fintown, a brilliant part of the world. Chad, good morning to you. In terms of the driving that takes place in the area, you're in a coffee booth, you're on the side of the road. Who better than someone like yourself to observe what's happening on the road? And in the Fintown area, you have concerns.
We do, and it is unfortunate that I do see some of the things that I do out there. Yes, the new roadworks is completed. It's great. Footpaths are wonderful. It's unfortunate that we have just too many heavy speedsters that come through Fintown.
And as you say, there has been a lot of, now I've not been through Fintown since the road was finished. So to my mind, mentioned Fintown, I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, I'll allow an extra 10, 15 minutes for your journey, because you're going to be going through Fintown at 10 kilometres an hour. And that is not the case now. So, and this so often happens in a place where really good roadworks are done. What you now have is a brand new spanked black tar, modern, perfect road going through Fintown. The problem with a great road like that is it almost invites speed.
It seems to, yes. And through Fintown, that's exactly what you have. You have a straightaway through the mountains of Donegal, where it's unfortunate. Either people have forgotten that it's an actual village with a school and church and library and you know, everything that a small village has, but it's a smooth, as now ourselves are starting to call it, the Fintown Motorway. Because people just fly through there, and there have been a couple of instances over the last two or three months that have been so bad that we've contacted who we think we know who to contact as far as the council, but it just seems to be falling on deaf ears. We know that they've done, you know, speed studies or speed checks or whatever, and we know that they found, you know, folks traveling at over 120 through a village that has a posted speed limit of 60. So, and we just are at a loss. And the two instances that I'm referring to involve cars jumping on footpaths to overtake vehicles. But then one time, a car jumped on the footpath to avoid an oncoming vehicle while they were in the middle of passing four vehicles through the town of Fintown.
Where there is a 60-kilometer an hour zone.
Yes. And everything we've done has fallen on deaf ears, and something's going to happen, and we just... We're at a loss of what to do.
What actually has the council done? I presume they've put the two, you often see they'll put sort of two strips of wire or whatever, a meter or whatever apart to gauge speeds and so on. I presume they've done all that and they've had their people on the ground as well. I mean, and I know a lot of the time what they'll say is they're building up statistics, they're building up a statistical picture of what's happening in an area. And, you know, I presume that has started. You have had, I presume, those two strips of wire going across the road to measure speed.
The two strips, no, they did not do that. What they did was put what they said was a speed camera, not a camera, a speed detecting device in three areas through the village. And that was done months ago. And like you say, I'm sure they're gathering data. I'm sure they're, you know, I guess they're going to keep gathering data until something really drastic happens. I don't know.
And the reality is, too, Fintan, where Fintan is situated, it's what most people would use as the main road between Letterkenny and Dunloe. It's the main road between Letterkenny and Glenties. It's the road between Ballybuffet, the Twin Towns and Dunloe.
Exactly.
Twin Towns and Glenties as well. So it is, I mean, you know, and the other thing that strikes me about that is I would occasionally for work travel to Dunloe. You leave Letterkenny, you drive through Mineroy, they're very windy, very bendy roads.
Right.
You know
right.
that ahead of you is the road, when you turn off to the right from Fintown, you've got that long, windy road up toward Doohery, then you've got the corkscrew outside Doohery.
Correct.
So you've come through Mineroy,
exactly.
which can be slow. You know you're heading toward mm-hmm. Doohery, which can be slow. And there's almost mm-hmm. this psychological thing is here, this is where I can make up some time, and that's the danger, and
right.
that's what people need to stop thinking, that we need to get that out of our minds as, oh, that new road, it's a brilliant road, we can make up a bit of time there.
Right.
And that's the way potentially
that's
people are thinking.
And even before, there are areas to overtake if you wanted to before Fintown and after Fintown. But for some reason, it's through the villages where people decide to overtake. And again, it's not everybody. But when I see 10 or 12 overtakings a day through the village, and the overtakings aren't passing the tractor, they're not passing just a slower vehicle, you know, it's passing somebody else who's doing 80 kilometers an hour. It's passing someone else. It's just the overall speed that is going to cause a big problem at some point.
How long is the new road actually? I'm trying to think in my own head now, but how long is that new road actually operational? It's a couple of months, isn't it?
Over a year now.
What's over a year?
They finished the blacktop. They finished the lines and all that last summer. But now they had to come back and redo a couple things and all that. But the actual finished road was done by last July.
I didn't think it was that long ago now, to be honest. It shows how behind the times I am. No, it is, and it's an important one.
You should come through Fintown.
I should go through more, actually. I did go through about 2 months ago, because I was there just a few weeks before the local elections covering a council meeting. It must have been one of the days when they were back doing some of the work. I mean, I seem to recall there was still some lingering roadworks taking place.
So that could have been the bollards that they were putting in. Okay, so here's another sort of side thing. There are 4 footpaths through the village. Four pedestrian crossings through the village that they have not finished yet. The markers are it's there. You can see where the crossings are going to be. You can see that they're going to put some kind of pedestrian crossing in. However, they haven't finished them. There are no zebra marks. There's nothing on the road that tells a motorist, hey, there could be a pedestrian here. But the one thing they did do a couple of months ago, possibly when you were coming through, they did put the bollards up, the little posts that are at normal pedestrian crossings. So that's part. They've started to come back and finish them, but the last communication that I had with anyone from the council said that they didn't know exactly how they were going to finish them.
Yeah.
So if they don't know, I don't know what else to do, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll certainly put it out there, and as we said at the offset, Chad, I mean, no one better than someone like yourself, who you literally are on the side of that road every day for hours and hours, and you know, you see what's going on, and your sort of observations would suggest that there is a problem, and it's an ongoing problem.
It is, and the picture that I posted last week of the kids riding their bike along the footpath. I just wanted folks to understand that the footpath is not waiting to be used. It is being used. People do use that daily. People use it, you know, all the time. And the kids that are up and down on scooters and bikes and walking, you know, especially during, you know, when they're not in school, you know, those kids are, we know them as well. You know, they come up and support us. They, you know, they become sort of extended family to us. and we don't want anything to happen to them either.
Yeah, and of course, Fintown, particularly this time of year with the steam railway and so much else going on around the county, Fintown is a busy tourist area, as you know, in excess of 3,000 vehicles going through there every day.
Right, exactly. Mm.
Chad, we'll certainly keep an eye on what's happening, and we'll be making contact with the council, and we'll see what the council will have to say. In the meantime, if you get any more words from the council or any of the representatives, please do get in touch and let us know what the story is. But for now, Chad Leffler, the owner of Your Man's Coffee Cove, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Well, thank you very much for everything you do as well.
Well, thank you, Chad. It is our pleasure. That's Chad there in Fintown, and a wonderful part of the world. And I can absolutely see, I do... Yeah, if you're driving Letterkenny, as I said, if you're driving Letterkenny to Dunloe, you do have, you've got Mina Roy and those twisty roads. Once you've got sort of through past Glen Swilly, it gets really twisty all through Mina Roy, all that whole area. Brilliant, lovely place to drive. If it's a sunny day, the scenery around there is gorgeous. But you know you come down then when you connect onto the road that comes from Ballybuffet through Glenfinn. Once you're on that road, it's just a straight line into Fintown. It's a lovely, wide, really good road. And I think psychologically, very often people are thinking, and if there's someone slow in front of you, you're thinking, God, if they're turning off now for Doohery, I'm going to get stuck behind them for ages. And maybe there's a thing in our heads that sort of says to us, take them now, take them now, take them now. There's nothing coming. And the problem is when you're driving through a village, you might see nothing coming, but you don't know when a bike is going to come out from the footpath. You don't know when a kid's going to come out from the footpath. You don't know what's going to happen. So maybe we, all of us, and I say us, all of us as drivers need to be really conscious of that and just conscious that, yeah, it's a lovely, big, straight, wide road, but it's not an invitation to overtake because it's also people's home. You'll have seen on the news over the weekend, and particularly Saturday night and yesterday, there was trouble in Derry City in the Nailers Row area close to the courthouse there on Saturday night. 10 police officers injured during disorder, fireworks, petrol bombs and other missiles used to attack officers. And you'll have noticed immediately the age of some of those involved was extremely young. I'm joined on the line by Councillor Lillian Sinoy-Barr, who is the Mayor of Derry City and Strabane District Council. Mayor, you're welcome.
Very much.
Lillian, in terms of the incidents that happened on Saturday, our understanding first and foremost is that, if I'm correct, I don't believe police are linking this with the anti-immigration protests that were taking place in Belfast. This is being treated as something different.
Yes, I think what we have seen circulating on social media is a group of young people, children literally, around 10 years of age, causing mayhem in our city on Saturday night. It's absolutely appalling to see the violence, which is completely unjustified. For young people targeting police who have been in extremely challenging, who have had an extremely challenging week throughout here in the north, and due to the ongoing tension and incidents of intimidation. But these two are completely not linked, and it's just appalling.
Listening to your party leader and the Foyle MP, Colm Eastwood, on the news last night, he was saying that he's in no doubt that there are other figures behind those young people. Those young people aren't just finding petrol bombs. Those young people aren't just finding fireworks. They're being given them, they're being prompted, and they're being pushed into the front line by others.
I think it's true, but I believe that the question we need to be asking now, it's not just about those who are behind the attacks, but where are the parents of these children? We've seen it is just young people, literally children. And the question that I would like us to be asking is, are these parents taking accountability? Are they responsible for their children? If I had a 10-year-old child who is not at home at 9 p.m., I'll be out on the street searching for them. And if I don't get them within an hour, I'll be asking the police. I'll be concerned about their safety. And I think the behavior is utterly unacceptable in this city. The people of Derry have rejected violence, and what happened on Saturday doesn't represent in any shape or form our people here, but I think we now need to have a very serious conversation with parents of these children.
The point was made at the weekend as well that these incidents took place almost literally outside a residential facility for elderly people. And I can't help thinking that those older people, they'll have lived through Operation Motorman, they'll have lived through the Battle of the Bogside, they'll have lived through Bloody Sunday and all its horrific aftermath. They'll have seen their neighbours shot and hurt. They'll have seen so much trouble in the city. I mean, the last thing they need or deserve at this point in their lives is this.
Absolutely. It's distressing to even think that they have been put through the same horrific experience that they had during the Troubles. This is not needed now. I just want to understand personally, what were they protesting about? Why were they targeting the police? You know, we can really talk about the social economic deprivation in this city, which could be used, but these are people behind, they are adults behind these issues. But I still want to stress, where are the parents of these children? Parents should know better than to allow mindless people taking advantage of their innocent children. These children are going to get criminal offense. This will destroy their entire life because of one thing that they did, which could have caused serious injuries to the police, or even worse, tragically, as we have seen before. So it's a serious conversation we really need to have as a city and district, particularly parents, because they have to take responsibility now.
Watching a BBC News report last night, one of the interesting things was that there were a number of tourists from Europe interviewed, and in both cases, they were saying they're not nervous about being in the city. They're not worried about their own safety, and that's something you want to see continue. But the problem is, if there are more incidents like this, perhaps people are going to think again about going to Derry, and Derry is such a wonderful city, it's such a wonderful area. The last thing you want to do is get some word out there that somehow Derry is dangerous, Derry is going back to being a no-go area, because it is anything but.
Absolutely, and this city has endured so much, and at the moment we should be celebrating the peace that was achieved because of people who worked so hard to ensure that this city is what it is right now. I was so proud of standing outside the gate hall on Wednesday last week talking about the positive of this city, people coming together to say we are an open society, we are welcoming our migrants, are welcome here, we look after them, this city is ready to grow economically, we are working hard to create more jobs for everyone, we are working hard to expand our university. The people who are causing this mayhem have absolutely no interest in the progress of this country and this city, and we need to call them out. We need to uproot them in our society, because we are ready to welcome investors to come to our city. And this city has seen so many tourists coming up the last few years. We want to maintain that. We want to show that we are open for business. But the attacks that took part on Saturday will not be able to get us that positive message to the world if we continue like this. And the people of this city actually don't want it in the first place. They want a peaceful society. And that's why I'm absolutely appalled by what happened, because we have made so much progress in our city and district.
Is it your belief that there will be a community response to this, that people within the community in Bogside, Craigan and further afield in Derry will effectively say to their children and say to their neighbours and say to their friends, no, this cannot happen, this has got to stop, and it's got to stop now?
I absolutely hope so. I was outside yesterday attending a very positive, uplifting event where the community in the Bogside came together to run a 5K marathon for raising money to a charity in the city that is supporting young people and adults with mental health illness. And this is the kind of programs we want to see running, very positive events. That is what the people of the Bogside want. And I have no doubt that this is a conversation that is going to be had in that place, because there's so much progress. They are very good community workers working in the area, really also condemning that violence, and political leaders are united in this.
Councillor Lillian Sinoy Barr, the Mayor of Derry City and Strabane, thank you very much indeed, Mayor, for speaking to us this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the situation there in Derry. And just to reiterate what the mayor said there and what police are saying as well, is they are not linking this to the anti-immigration protests that were taking place in Belfast and elsewhere over the weekend as well. As you'll have been hearing on the news with Donna Marie, airlines and ferry companies that allow someone to board or disembark without the proper documentation are facing higher fines from today. And to discuss that and its repercussions, we're joined, I'm delighted to say, on Zoom by our go-to commentator for all issues travel, Eoin Corrie. Eoin, good morning.
Good morning, Donald. How are you this morning?
Very, very well indeed, Eoin. Great to talk to you. Eoin, how significant is this? The fine is increasing from 3,000 to 5,000 euro. Now, I must say there's a little cynical part of me that says a 2,000 increase in a fine imposed on an airline, I don't think too many airlines are going to be panicking and quaking in their boots about that.
Well, it's going to cost a lot of money if the level of fines remains more or less where it is. It's about 5,000 in 2022 and about 3,285 exactly in 2023. So it'll cost about 25 million to the aviation industry. A couple of things about it, though. You know, the fines are already very high. So when these things happen, it tends not to be somebody arriving, to set up a people smuggling business. It tends to be someone who has a tear in their passport, water damage. They've been out in the rain. They've been on the beach. They're the people who get refused boarding at check-in because of the serious fines in airlines. And they're also the ones that get stopped in immigration and refused entry. And that's when the fine goes back to the airline. We've had people going to Lourdes with out-of-date passports where the airline has been fined the 3,000 euro. That's how the situation works in the ground. And I do think that increasing the fine from 3,000 to 5,000 probably won't increase the level of diligence by the airlines and the ferry companies, because certainly that's the suggestion that Helen McEntee is making when she introduces the increase in fine. She's saying these guys aren't diligent about checking. My experience, they are.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking too, because I know if I were intending to fly and I turn up at the airport without my passport, I know I am getting nowhere near that plane. And I suspect the same holds true for yourself and for most people. And it's interesting you mentioned, because I was going to say that, I mean, we've all heard stories about someone not being allowed on because the dog chewed one page of a passport or there was a little tear or something like that. I mean, it begs the question, how do people actually manage to get onto the planes then? You know, if we can't do it, you know, under any circumstance because we have a tear in our passport, how do people manage to get on planes without passports at all?
And the big issue is if somebody's determined to flout the law and enter illegally, we're asking what Helen McEntee is saying, that the member of the cabin crew, the girl or the fella on the gate, who is checking in 189 passengers in 20 minutes, is supposed to have that diligent eagle eye that detects someone who's determined to make their way through immigration officials and all the software and all the legal rights they have. It's a very it's a real exercise in pointing the finger elsewhere and offloading the responsibility. We can get hung up on what Helen McEntee is doing, but every single European country is doing this. They're increasing fines. They introduce fines for airlines to make them more diligent. And they just pump it up and say, well, you're not diligent enough. We're going to increase your diligence by increasing the fine. Really doesn't work like that. The 25 million extra is going to have to be paid by us in extra fares. And the consequences, by the way, for somebody, sometimes they don't work for the airline. Ryanair would and Aer Lingus would employ contract staff in most of the airlines in Europe. The person who lets somebody on with the torn passport or with the water damage could lose their job. That's the outcome of what's happening today. The airline will get the fine and they'll go straight back to the young person who, usually young person, who checked in 189 passengers onto the flight at the gate and say, it was your responsibility in the horrible, cruel world we live in. So I don't think it'll make any difference where most of the changes I've seen have come is that Gardaí are more likely to start checking passports as people enter the exit the aircraft rather than at the immigration. It's sporadic, it's spot checking, it's only started in the last year. And the reason is there is evidence, or there's anecdotal evidence, and there's probably real evidence of people destroying paperwork when they land. There's no way that someone at the check-in desk or the gate can be held responsible for someone boarding an aircraft and then flushing a passport down the toilet when they land.
In my naivety, I always assumed that the main passport check at the airport was going to be when you're going through security at departures, and that the check at the gate was a sort of a cursory look at the passport just to make sure that the name matched what was written on the boarding card. I mean, I would have always thought that the main passport check, you've gone through security, and nobody should have got through security that doesn't have the proper documentation. Obviously, the check-in process and the gate is far more important than I would have potentially thought.
Okay, let's work out, let's talk through what everybody does, because you make a very good point there. Airport security doesn't really need your passport. They just want to see your boarding card.
Yeah.
They just want to know you're legally entitled to enter the sanitized departures area from the arrivals area where everyone can come and go. The second thing you're looking for, the first place you're stopping is the check-in. That's where the real issue of visas, passport, in date, water damage in the passport. That's the check-in, and it tends to be you have a little bit more time there. That's where the real checking should be done. We have a very powerful passport donor. We tend to be able to come and go around the world without too much hassle. But listeners who've flown through the Middle East will know the long queue at the check-in desk as everybody goes through their documentation. Have you the right visa? Is the visa the right date? Does it have the right clearances? They almost are relieved when you arrive at an Irish passport, because that's where all that very mountain of documentation that some countries need, including Irish residents with a foreign passports, need. It's at the check-in desk. What they look for at the gate tends to be, are you the same person that's name is on the boarding card? That's very clearly to prevent people reselling airline tickets. Buy a cheap ticket and sell it to somebody else with a day to go. You know, you make sure that the person at the gate has the right, is the same person as is on the boarding card. They look for a passport for that, but they've also, and this is where the fine has come in, have been ramped up to check the validity of that documentation at the gate. It's a huge amount of to ask of an already overworked airline employee. And the sad thing is here that it's not just Helen McEntee, but all over Europe we've seen, and Willie Walsh, who is Secretary General of the International Aviation Body, is from Glasnevin, is very vocal on this. We've seen increasingly the immigration industry, the immigration officials, the bureaucrats, offloading their responsibilities onto airlines, and it gives the politicians a chance to point the finger somewhere else. Putting it back on the airlines isn't really a solution, but it looks like a solution from where some people are looking.
Is it the case that what's happened over the years is procedures have changed, but sort of the protocols haven't changed with them? And I'll tell you what I'm talking about. There was a time when you were checking in for a flight, you walked into an airport, you walked up to a desk, there was a person at the desk, you gave them your passport, you gave them your reference number, and they issued you with a boarding card. And at that point, your passport was checked, check number one. Then you go through departures, check number two. Then you get to the gate, check number three. We've now pretty much almost done away with that happening, because if it's Aer Lingus, you're checking it online. You can put your cases through the automatic thing if you're in Dublin Airport. You can easily get to the departure gate without speaking to a single person. having checked in your bag and checked in online and all that. So that's one part of the process where a passport might have been checked, completely taken out of the equation. But we still have exactly the same procedures after that. The procedures further down the line haven't changed, even though the check-in is now completely different. Does that make sense?
Traveling in the way we travel within Europe, it's almost like getting the bus. What you will find if you are moving into a more complicated environment, most listeners will be familiar with traveling to the United States and Canada, for instance. When you go for your mobile boarding pass to be issued on your phone and anything else isn't in order, it won't issue the boarding pass. It means you'll have to go to check-in. And the reason is that it's fairly simple for Irish passport holders. You need your ETA for Canada or your ESTA for the United States. But if you're someone who was born in India, traveling on an Indian passport, living in Ireland and going to France, it won't issue your mobile boarding pass because they will need to know that you have your Schengen visa in order. Now, all of that, increasingly the visa system is being brought online as well. We've already had a couple of test flights where people don't even have to stop at immigration, that with the iris recognition that they can walk through security at the airport, get on board and walk off at the other end, and their passport in their pocket can be digitally read. All of that technology is in place. It won't be introduced massively until every single security official in Europe is happy with it. But the technology is certainly there for that. It all works wonderfully if we're flying to Malaga or Faro. But if you've got something more complicated, like going to a country that requires a visa, you do need to check in still, Donald. The system still breaks down. The vast majority of those fines that have been doled out to airlines, and there were nearly 5,000 in 2022, 3,285 in 2023, repeating those figures because just that's the level of what we're dealing with. Less than 0.01% of inbound people coming to Ireland. Okay, the vast majority of those are not people arriving with sophisticated documentation to try and defraud the authorities. They're people, as you say, the dog chewed, paid 32 of my passport.
Owen Corry, as ever, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Actually, Owen, thank you. That's Owen Corry there. Going to go for news in just a few moments. But before we do, we have two family heritage cards valued at €90 to give away. These cards are free for one family, two adults and up to five children over 12, to over 45 OPW managed heritage sites across the country. You can visit any or all attractions as often as you like, and heritageweek.ie for all event listings for Donegal and across the country. To win, we have a cryptic clue, and we want you to listen to the cryptic clue and identify the heritage site in Donegal that this refers to. And we're in poetic mood today on Highland Radio. High above Burt, this fort has found fame, as dramatic as the theatre that also bears its name. Text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25000.